Side 5. Ideroo by William Gibson. Continuing on page 203. Yamazaki was on the chair to his right, reattaching the sleeve of his plaid jacket with bright gold safety pins from an evil elf hat emergency sewing kit. Lainey had never actually seen anyone use a hotel room's emergency sewing kit for anything. Yamazaki had removed his damaged glasses and was working with the jacket held close to his face. This made him look older and somehow calmer. To Yamazaki's right, the red-haired technician, who was called Shannon, was sitting up very straight and reading a complimentary style magazine. Rez was sprawled on the bed, propped up on the maximum available number of pillows, and Willie Jude sat at its foot, channel surfing with his video unit. The panic at the Western World apparently hadn't made the news yet, although the drummer said he'd caught an oblique reference on one of the clubbing channels. Harley was standing by the window, pressing an ice cube and a white washcloth against her swollen lip. "Did he give you any idea when he might turn up?"
Rez from the bed.
"No," Harley said. "But he made it clear he wanted you to wait."
Rez sighed. "Let the people take care of you, Rez," Willie Jude said. "It's what they're paid for."
Lainey had taken it for granted that all of them were expected to wait, along with Rez, for Blackwell. Now he decided to try to return to his room. All they could do was stop him. Blackwell opened the door from the corridor, pocketing something black. Something that definitely wasn't your standard-issue hotel key. There was a pale X of micropore across his right cheek, the longest arm reaching the tip of his chin.
"Evening, Keithy," Rez said.
"You really mustn't piss off like that," the bodyguard said. "The Russians are a serious crew. Massive triers, those boys. Wouldn't do if they got hold of you, Rosa. Not at all. You wouldn't like it."
"Kuwayama and the platform?"
"Have to tell you, Rez."
Blackwell stood at the foot of the bed.
"I've seen you go with women I wouldn't take to a shit fight on a dark night, but at least they were human. Hear what I'm saying?"
"I do, Keithy," the singer said. "I know how you feel about her, but she'll come around. It's the way of things, Keithy. The new way. New world."
"I don't know anything about that. My old dad was a painter and a docker. Had a docky's brief. Broke his heart, I turned out the sort of crim I did. Died before you'd got me out of B division. Would have liked him to see me assume responsibility, Rez. For you? For your safety? But now I don't know. Might not impress him so. Might tell me I'm just minding a fool with a bloated sense of himself."
Rez came up off the bed, surprising Lainey with his speed, a performer's grace. And then he was in front of Blackwell, his hands on the huge shoulders.
"But you don't think that, do you, Keithy? You didn't in Pentridge. Not when you came for me. And not when I came back for you."
Blackwell's eyes glistened. He was about to say something, but Yamazaki suddenly stood up, blinking, and put his green plaid sport coat on. He craned his neck, peering nearsightedly at the pins he'd used to mend it, then seemed to realize that everyone in the suite was looking at him. He coughed nervously and sat back down. A silence followed.
"Head of line I was, Rosa," Blackwell said, breaking it.
Rez clapped the bodyguard's shoulder, releasing him.
"Stressed.
I know." Rez smiled.
"Kuwayama? The platform?"
"Had his own team there.
And our crashers?"
"It's a bit odd," Blackwell said. "Come but not, Rez. Say, we've stolen something of theirs. Or at least that's all the one I questioned knew."
Rez looked puzzled, but seemed to put whatever it was out of his mind.
"Take me back to the hotel," he said.
Blackwell checked his huge steel watch.
"They're still sweeping there. Another 20 minutes and I'll check with them."
Lainey took this as his opportunity, standing up and stepping past Blackwell to the door.
"I'm going to take a hot shower," he said. "Cracked my ribs up there."
No one said anything.
"Call if you need me."
Then he opened the door, stepped out, closed it behind him, and limped in what he hoped was the direction of the elevator. It was. In it, he leaned against the mirrored wall and touched the button for his floor. It said something in a soothing tone, Japanese. The door closed. He shut his eyes. He opened his eyes as the door opened, stepped out, turned the wrong way, then the right way, fishing for his wallet where he'd put his key. Still there.
bath, hot shower. These concepts more theoretical as he approached his room. Sleep, that was it. Undress and lie down and not be conscious. He swiped the key down the slot. Nothing. Again, click. Kathy Torrance, sitting on the edge of his bed. She smiled at him, pointed at the moving figures on the screen. One of whom was Lainey, naked, with a larger erection than he recalled ever having had. The girl, vaguely familiar, but whoever she was, he didn't remember doing that with her. "Don't you stand there," Kathy said. "You have to see this."
"That's not me," Lainey said.
"I know," she said, delighted. "He's way too big. And I'd love to see you try to prove it."
30. The Etruscan. Chia worked the tips back on, re-goggled, let Masahiko take her to his room. That same instant transition, the virtual Venice icon strobing. Gomi Boy was there, and someone else, though at first she couldn't see him. Just this glass tumbler on the work surface that hadn't been there before, mapped to a higher resolution than the rest of the room. Filthy, chipped at the rim, something crusted at the bottom. "That woman," Gomi Boy began, but someone coughed, a strange, dry rattle.
"You are an interesting young woman," said a voice unlike any Chia had heard,
a weird, attenuated rasp that might have been compiled from a library of faint, dry, random sounds, so that a word's long vowel might be wires in the wind, or the click of a consonant, the rattle of a dead leaf against a window.
"Young woman," it said again.
And then there was something indescribable, which she guessed was meant as laughter.
"This is the Etruscan," Masahiko said. "The Etruscan accessed your father's expense account for us. He is most skilled."
Something there for a second, skull-like, above the dirty glass, the mouth drawn and petulant.
"It was nothing, really."
She told herself it was all presentation. Like when Zona presented, you could never quite focus on her. This was like that, but more extreme, and a lot of work put into the audio, but she didn't like it.
"You brought me here to meet him?" she asked Masahiko.
"Oh, no," said the Etruscan, the O of polyphonic chorale. "I just wanted to look, dear."
The thing like laughter.
"The woman," Gomi Boy said. "Did you arrange for her to meet you at Hotel Dai?"
"No," Chia said. "She checked the taxi cabs. So you aren't as smart as you think."
"Well put."
The put. The sound of a single pebble falling into a dry marble fountain. Chia focused on the glass. A huge centipede lay curled at its bottom, a thing the color of dead cuticle. She saw that it had tiny pink hands. The glass was gone.
"Sorry," Masahiko said. "He wished only to meet you."
"Who is the woman in Hotel Dai?"
Gomi Boy's anime eyes were bright and eager, but his tone was hard.
"Mary Alice," Chia said. "Her boyfriend's with those Russians. The thing they're after's in my bag there."
"What thing?"
"Mary Alice says it's a nano-assembler."
"Unlikely,"
Gomi Boy said.
"Tell it to the Russians."
"But you have contraband in the room?"
"I've got something they want."
Gomi Boy grimaced, vanished.
"Where'd he go?"
"This changes the situation," Masahiko said. "You did not tell us you have contraband."
"You didn't ask. You didn't ask why they were looking for me."
Masahiko shrugged. Calm as ever.
"We were not certain that it was you they were interested in. The Combinat would be very eager for the skills of someone like the Etruscan, for instance. Many people know of Hak Nam, but few know how to enter. We reacted to protect the integrity of the city."
"But your computer's in the hotel room. They can just come there and get it."
"It no longer matters," he said. "I am no longer engaged in processing. My duties are assumed by others. Gomi Boy is concerned now for his safety outside. You understand? Penalties for possession of contraband are harsh. He is particularly vulnerable because he deals in second-hand equipment."
"I don't think it's the police you want to worry about right now. I think we want to call the police. Mary Alice says those Russians will kill us if they find us.
The police would not be a good idea. The Etruscan has access to your father's account in Singapore. That is a crime.
I think I'd rather get arrested than killed.
Masahiko considered that.
Come with me, he said. Your visitor is waiting.
Not the centipede, Shia said. Forget it.
No, he said. Not the Etruscan. Come.
And they were out of his room. Fast forward through the maze of Hocknob, up twisted stairwells and through corridors. The strange, compacted world flickering past.
What is this place? A communal site, right? But what are you so worried about? Why is it all a secret?
Walled City is of the net, but not on it. There are no laws here, only agreements.
You can't be on the net and not be on the net, Chia said as they shot up a final flight of stairs.
Distributed processing, he said. Interstitial. It began with a shared kill file.
Sona!
There, across this uneven roofscape, overgrown with strangeness.
Touch nothing. Some are traps. I come to you.
Zona, presenting in that quick, fragmentary way, moved forward. To Chia's right, a kind of ancient car lay tilted in a drift of random textures, something like a Christmas tree growing from its unbroken windshield. Beyond that, she guessed that the rooftops of the walled city were its dumping ground. But the things abandoned there were like objects out of a dream. Bitmapped fantasies discarded by their creators, their jumbled shapes and textures baffling the eye. The attempt to sort and decipher them, inducing a kind of vertigo. Some were moving. Then a movement high in the gasoline sky caught her eye. Zona's bird things?
I went to your site, Shia said. You weren't there. Something.
I know. Did you see it?
As Zona passed the Christmas tree, its round silver ornaments displayed black eye holes, each pair turning to follow her.
No. I thought I heard it. I do not know what it is.
Zona's presentation was even quicker and more jumpy than usual.
I came here for advice. They told me that you had been to my site, and that now you were here. You know this place? Someone here helped me establish my site. It is impossible to come here without an invitation, you understand? My name is on a list. Although I cannot go below into the city itself unaccompanied. Zona, I'm in so much trouble now. We're hiding in this horrible hotel, and Mary Alice is there?
This bitch who made you her mule, yes? She is where?
In the room at this hotel. She said she broke up with her boyfriend, and it's his. The nano thing.
The what?
She says it's some kind of nano assembler thing.
Zona Rosa's features snapped into focus as her heavy eyebrows shot up.
Nanotechnology?
This is in your bag? Masahiko asked.
Wrapped in plastic.
One moment. He vanished.
Who is that?
Zona asked.
Masahiko, Mitsuko's brother. He lives here.
Where did he go?
Back to the hotel we're porting from.
This shit you aren't in, it is crazy,
Zona said.
Please, Zona, help me. I don't think I'll ever get home.
Masahiko reappeared, the thing in his hand, minus the duty-free bag.
I scanned it, he said. Immediate identification as Rodel Van Erp, Primary Biomolecular Programming Module C/7A. This is a lab prototype.
We are unable to determine its exact legal status, but the production model, C/9E, is Class 1 nanotechnology, proscribed under international law. Japanese law, conviction of illegal possession of Class 1 device carries automatic life sentence.
Life?
Chia said.
Same for thermonuclear device, he said apologetically. Poison gas. Biological weapon.
He held up the scanned object for Zona's inspection.
Zona looked at it. Fuck your mother, she said, her tone one of somber respect.
31. The way things work.
See how things work, Laney. What goes around comes around. You can run, but you can't hide. Know those expressions, Laney? How some things get to be cliches because they touch on certain truths. Laney. Talk to me, Laney.
Laney lowered himself into one of the miniature armchairs, hugging his ribs.
You look like shit, Laney. Where have you been?
The Western world, he said. He didn't like watching himself do those things on the screen, but he found he couldn't look away. He knew that wasn't him there. It mapped his face onto someone else, but it was his face. He remembered hearing something someone had said about mirrors a long time ago, that they were somehow unnatural and dangerous. So you're trying your hand at the Orient now? She hadn't understood, he thought, which meant she didn't know where he'd been earlier, which meant they hadn't been watching him here. That's that guy, he said. That Hillman from the day I met you, my job interview. He was a porno extra. Don't you think he's being awfully rough with her?
Who is she, Kathy?
Think back. If you can remember Clinton Hillman, Laney.
Laney shook his head.
Think actor, Laney. Think Allison Shines.
His daughter, Laney said. No doubt at all.
I definitely think that's too rough. That borders on rape, Laney. Assault. I think we could make a case for assault.
Why would she do that?
How could you get her to do that? Turning from the screen to Kathy.
I mean, unless it really is rape.
Let's hear the soundtrack, Laney. See what you're saying there. Cast some light on motive.
Don't, he said. I don't want to hear it.
You're talking about her father the whole time, Laney. I mean, obsession is one thing, but just droning on about him that way. Right through a white-knuckle skull-fuck.
He almost fell coming up out of the chair.
He couldn't find the manual controls.
Wires back there.
He pulled out the first three he found.
Third did it.
Put it on the low-res tab, Laney. Rock and roll lifestyle. Aren't you supposed to throw them out the window, though?
What's it about, Kathy? You want to just tell me now?
She smiled at him.
Exactly the smile he remembered from his job interview.
May I call you Colin?
Kathy, fuck you.
She laughed. We may have come full circle, Laney.
How's that?
Think of this as a job interview.
I've got a job.
We're offering you another, Laney. You can moonlight.
Laney made it back to the chair,
lowered himself in as slowly as possible. The pain made him gasp. What's wrong?
Ribs. Hurt. He found a way to settle back that seemed to help.
Were you in a fight? Is that blood?
I went to a club.
This is Tokyo, Laney. They don't have fights in clubs.
That was really her, the daughter?
It certainly is. And she'll be more than happy to talk about it on Slit Scan, Laney. Seduced into sadistic sex games by a stalker obsessed with her loving dad. Who has come around, by the way. Who is one of ours now.
Why? Why would she do that? Because he told her to?
Because, Kathy said, looking at him as though she were concerned that he might have sustained brain damage as well. She's an aspiring actress in her own right, Laney.
She looked at him hopefully, as though he might suddenly start to process.
The big break?
That is going to be her big break?
A break, Kathy Torrance said, is a break. And you know something? I'm trying really hard to give you one instead. Right now. And it wouldn't be the first, would it?
The phone began to ring.
You'd better take this, she said, passing him the white slab of cedar.
Yes.
The fan activity database.
It was Yamazaki.
You must access it now.
Where are you?
In hotel garage, with Van.
Look, I'm in kind of rough shape here. Can it wait?
Wait?
Yamazaki sounded horrified.
Laney looked at Kathy Torrance.
She was wearing something black and not quite short enough to show her tattoo.
Her hair was shorter now.
I'll be down when I can. Keep it open for me.
He hung up before Yamazaki could reply. What was that about?
Shiatsu.
You're lying.
What do you want, Kathy? What's the deal?
Him? I want him. I want to weigh in. I want to know what he's doing. I want to know what he thinks he's doing, trying to screw a piece of Japanese software.
Marry, Laney said. Her smile vanished.
You don't correct me, Laney.
You want me to spy on him?
Research.
Balls.
You wish.
If I got anything you could use, you'd want me to set him up.
The smile returned. Let's not get ahead of ourselves.
And I get
a life. A life in which you haven't been branded an obsessive stalker who preyed on the attractive daughter of the object of your obsession. A life in which it isn't public knowledge that a series of disastrous pharmaceutical trials permanently and hideously rewired you. Fair enough?
What about her, the daughter? She'd do all that with the Hillman guy for nothing?
Your call, Laney. Work for us. Get me what I need. She's shit out of luck.
That easy? She'd go along with that, after what she had to do?
If she wants even the remotest hope of having a career eventually, yes.
Laney looked at her. That isn't me. It's a morph. If I could prove it was a morph, I could sue you.
Really? You could afford that, could you? It takes years. And even then, you might not win. We've got a lot of money and talent to throw at problems like that, Laney. We do it all the time.
The door chimed.
That'll be mine, she said.
She got up, went to the door, touched the security screen.
Laney glimpsed part of a man's face.
She opened the door. It was Rice Daniels, minus his trademark sunglasses.
Rice is with us now, Laney, she said. He's been a terrific help with your backgrounder.
Out of control didn't work out, Laney asked Daniels.
Daniels showed Laney a lot of very white teeth.
I'm sure we could work together, Laney. I hope you don't have any issues around what happened.
Issues, Laney said.
Kathy walked back, handed Laney a blank white card with a penciled number. Call me. Before 9 tomorrow, leave a message. Yes or no?
You're giving me a choice?
It's more fun that way. I want you to think about it.
She reached down and flicked the collar of Laney's shirt.
Stitch count, she said.
Turned and walked out,
Daniels pulling the door shut behind them. Laney sat there, staring at the closed door, until the phone began to ring.
It was Yamazaki. 32. The Uninvited.
We must attack, said Zona Rosa, punctuating it with a quick shift to Aztec Death's Head mode.
They were with Masahiko and Gomi Boy now, back in Masahiko's room in the walled city, away from the hypnotic chaos of the crawling roofscape.
Attack!
Gomi Boy's huge eyes bulged as brightly as ever, but his voice betrayed his tension.
Who will you attack? We will find a way to carry the fight to the enemy, Zona Rosa said gravely. Passivity is death.
Something that looked to Chia like a bright orange drink coaster came gliding in under Masahiko's door and across the floor, but the shadow thing gobbled it before she could get a closer look.
You, said Gomi Boy to Zona Rosa, are in Mexico City. You are not physically or legally endangered by any of this.
Physically? Said Zona Rosa, snapping back into a furious version of her previous presentation.
You want physically, son of a bitch? I'll fucking kill you physically. You think I can't do that? You think you live on Mars or something? I fly here aeronaves direct with my girls. We find you. We cut your Japanese balls off. You think I can't do that?
The sawtoothed, dragon-handled switchblade was out now, quivering in front of Gomi Boy's face.
Zona, please, Chia begged. He hasn't done anything so far, but help me. Don't.
Zona snorted, the blade reversed, vanishing.
You don't push me, she said to Gomi Boy. My friend, she is in some bad shit, and I have some ghost bastard thing on my site.
It's in the software on my sand vendors, too, Chia said. I saw it in Venice.
You saw it?
The fractured images cycling faster.
I saw something.
What?
You saw what?
Someone. By the fountain at the end of the street. It might have been a woman. I was scared. I bailed. I left my Venice open.
Show me, Zona said. In my sight, I could not see it. My lizards could not see it either, but they grew agitated. The birds flew lower, but they could find nothing. Show me this thing.
But Zona.
Now, Zona said. It is part of the shit you are in.
It must be.
My God,
Zona said, staring up at St. Mark's.
Who wrote this?
It's a city in Italy, Chia said. It used to be a country. They invented banking. That's St. Mark's. There's a module where you can see what they do at Easter when the patriarch brings out all these bones and things, set into gold, parts of saints.
Zona Rosa crossed herself.
Like Mexico. This is where the water comes up to the bottoms of the doors And the streets, they are water? I think a lot of this is underwater now,
Chia said.
Why is it dark? I keep it that way.
Chia looked away, searching the shadows beneath archway.
That walled city, Zona, what is that? They say it began as a shared kill file. You know what a kill file is? No? It is an old expression, a way to avoid incoming messages. With the kill file in place, it was like those messages never existed. They never reached you. This was when the net was new, understand?
Chia knew that when her mother was born, there had been no net at all, or almost none. But as her teachers in school were fond of pointing out, that was hard to imagine.
How could that become a city? And why is it all squashed in like that? Someone had the idea to turn the kill file inside out. This is not really how it happened, you understand, but this is how the story is told. That the people who founded Hak Nam were angry, because the net had been very free, you could do what you wanted. But then the governments and the companies, they had different ideas of what you could, what you couldn't do. So these people, they found a way to unravel something. A little place, a piece, like a cloth. They made something like a kill file of everything. Everything they didn't like. And they turned that inside out.
Zona's hands moved like a conjurer's.
And they pushed it through to the other side. The other side of what? This is not how they did it, Zona said impatiently. This is the story. How they did it, I don't know. But that is the story, how they tell it. They went there to get away from the laws. To have no laws. Like when the net was new. But why did they make it look like that?
That I know, Zona said.
The woman who came to help me build my country, she told me. There was a place near an airport, Kowloon, when Hong Kong was in China. But there had been a mistake a long time ago, and that place, very small, many people, it still belonged to China. So there was no law there, an outlaw place. And more people crowded in. They built it up higher. No rules, just building, just people living. Police wouldn't go there. Drugs and whores and gambling. But people living, too. Factories, restaurants. A city. No laws. Is it still there?
No, Zona said.
They tore it down before it all became China again. They made a park with concrete. But these people, the ones they say made a hole in the net, they found the data, the history of it, maps, pictures. They built it again. Why?
Don't ask me. Ask them. They're all crazy. Zona was scanning the piazza.
This place makes me cold.
Chia considered bringing the sun up, but then Zona pointed.
Who is that?
Chia watched her music master, or something that looked like him, stroll toward them from the shadows of the stone arches where the cafes were, a dark greatcoat flapping to reveal a lining the color of polished lead.
I've got a software agent that looks like that, Chia said. But he isn't supposed to be there unless I cross a bridge. And I couldn't find him when I was here before.
This is not the one you saw?
No,
Chia said. An aura bristled around Zona, who grew taller as the spiky cloud of light increased in resolution. Shifting, overlapping planes, like ghosts of broken glass. Iridescent insects whirling there. As the figure in the greatcoat drew toward them across the piazza's patchworked stone, snow resolved behind it. It left footprints. Zona's aura bristled with gathering menace, a thunderhead of flickering darkness forming above the shattered sheets of light. There was a sound that reminded Chia of one of those blue light bug zappers, popping a particularly juicy one. And then vast wings cut the air, so close. Zona's Colombian condors, things from the data haven. And gone. Zona spat a stream of Spanish that overwhelmed translation, a long and liquid curse. Behind the advancing figure of her music master, Chia saw the facades of the great square vanish entirely behind curtains of snow. Zona's switchblade seemed the size of a chainsaw now, its toothed spine rippling, alive. The golden dragons from the plastic handles chased their fire-maned double tails around her brown fist through miniature clouds of Chinese embroidery.
I'll take you out,
Zona said, as if savoring each word. Chia saw the world of snow that had swallowed her Venice abruptly contract, shrinking, following the line of footprints. And the features of the music master became those of Ray Towei, the Ida Room.
You already have, said the Ida Room.
Topology. Arlie was waiting for him by the elevator, on the fifth and lowest of the hotel's parking levels. She'd changed back into the work clothes he'd first seen her in. Despite the patch of micropore on her swollen lip, the jeans and nylon bomber jacket made her look wide awake and competent. Two things Lainey felt he might never be again.
You look terrible, she said.
The ceiling here was very low, and flocked with something drab and woolly to reduce noise. Lines of bioluminescent cable were bracketed to it, and the unmoving air was heavy with the sugary smell of exhausted gasohol. Spotless ranks of small Japanese cars glittered like bright wet candy. Yamazaki seemed to feel it was urgent, Lainey said.
If you don't do it now, she said, we don't know how long it'll take to get it all up and running again.
So we'll do it.
You don't look like you should even be walking.
He started walking, unsteadily, as if by way of demonstration. Where's Rez?
Blackwell's taken him back to his hotel. The sweep team didn't find anything. This way.
She led him along a line of surgically clean grills and bumpers. He saw the green van parked with its front to the wall, its hatch and doors open. It was fenced behind orange plastic barricades and surrounded by the black modules. Shannon, the red-haired tech, was doing something to a red and black cube centered on a folding plastic table. What's that? Lainey asked.
Espresso, he said, his hand inside the housing. But I think the gasket's warped. Sit here, Lainey,
Arlie said, indicating the van's front passenger seat.
It reclines.
Lainey climbed up into the seat. Don't try it, he said. You might not be able to wake me up. Yamazaki appeared over Arlie's shoulder, blinking.
You will access the low-res data as before, Lainey-san, but you will simultaneously access the fan activity base. Depth of field, dimensionality. The fan activity data providing the degree of personalization you require. Parallax, yes?
Arlie handed Lainey the iPhones.
Have a look, she said. If it doesn't work, to hell with it.
Yamazaki flinched.
Either way, we'll go and find you the hotel doctor after.
Lainey settled his neck against the seat's headrest and put the phones on. Nothing.
He closed his eyes, heard the phones power up, opened his eyes to those same faces of data he'd seen earlier in Akihabara. Characterless, institutional in their regularity. Here comes the fan club, he heard Arlie say.
And the barren faces were suddenly translucent. Networked depths of postings and commentary revealed their baffling organic complexity. Something's, he started to say, but then he was back in the apartment in Stockholm with the huge ceramic stove. But it was a place this time, not just a million tidily filed factoids. Shadows of flames danced behind the narrow mica panes of the stove's ornate iron door. Candlelight. The floors were wooden planks, each one as broad as Lainey's shoulders, spread with the soft tones of old carpets. Something directed his point of view into the next room, past a leather sofa spread with more and smaller rugs, and showed him the black window beyond the open drapes, where snowflakes, very large and ornate, fell with a deliberate gravity past the frosted panes.
Getting anything?
Arlie. Somewhere far away. He didn't answer, watching as his view reversed. To be maneuvered down a central hallway, where a tall oval mirror showed no reflection as he passed. He thought of CD-ROMs he'd explored in the orphanage, haunted castles, monstrously infested spacecraft abandoned in orbit. Click here, click there. And somehow, he'd always felt that he never found the central marvel, the thing that would have made the hunt worthwhile. Because it wasn't there, he'd finally decided. It never quite was, and so he'd lost interest in those games. But the central marvel here, click on bedroom, was Rei Toe, propped on white pillows at the head of a sea of white, her head and gowned shoulders showing above eyelet lace and the glow of fine cotton.
You are our guest tonight, she said. I wasn't able to speak with you. I am sorry. It ended badly and you were injured. He looked at her, waiting for the mountain valleys and the bells. But she only looked back. Nothing came. And he remembered what Yamazaki had said about bandwidth. A stab of pain in his side.
How do you know that I was injured?
The preliminary low-res security report. Technician Paul Shannon states that you appeared to have been injured.
Why are you here?
Laney, he heard Arlie say. Are you okay? I found it,
the Eideru said.
Isn't it wonderful? But he has not been here since the renovations were completed, so really he's never been here. But you've been here before, haven't you? I think that's how I found it.
She smiled. She was very beautiful here, floating in this whiteness.
He hadn't been able to really look at her in the Western world.
I accessed it earlier, he said, but it wasn't like this.
But then it rounded out, didn't it? It became so much better, because one of the artisans who reassembled the stoves had made a record of it all when it was done, just for herself, for her friends. But you see what it's done. It was in the data from the fan club.
She gazed in delight at a single taper, banded horizontally in cream and indigo, that burned in a candlestick of burnished brass. Beside it on the bedside table were a book and an orange.
I feel very close to him here.
I'd feel closer to him if you'd put me back outside.
In the street? It's snowing. And I'm not certain the street is there.
In the general data construct.
Please.
So I can do my job.
Oh, she said, and smiled at him.
And he was staring into the tangled depths of the data faces.
Laney,
Arlie said, touching his shoulder. Who are you talking to?
The Eideru, Laney said.
In nodal manifestation?
Yamazaki.
No, she was there in the data. I don't know how.
She was in a model of his place in Stockholm. Said she got there because I'd cruised it before. Then I asked her to put me back out here.
Out where?
Arlie asked.
Where I can see, Laney said,
staring down into intricately overgrown canyons, dense with branchings that reminded him of Arlie's real tree 7.2, but organic somehow, every segment thickly patched with commentary.
Yamazaki was right. The fan stuff seems to do it.
He heard Gérald Delouvrier back in the Tidal lab urge him not to focus. What you do, it is the opposite of the concentration, but we will learn to direct it. Drift. Down through deltas of former girlfriends, degrees of confirmation of girlfriendhood, personal sightings of Rez or Lo together with whichever woman in whatever public place, each account illuminated with the importance the event had held for whoever had posted it. This being for Laney the most peculiar aspect of this data, the perspective in which these two loomed. Human in every detail, but then not so. Everything scrupulously, fanatically accurate, probably, but always assembled around the hollow armature of celebrity. He could see celebrity here, not like Kathy's idea of a primal substance, but as a paradoxical quality inherent in the substance of the world. He saw that the quantity of data accumulated here by the band's fans was much greater than everything the band themselves had ever generated. And their actual art, the music and the videos, was the merest fragment of that.
But this is my favorite,
Laney heard the Eideru say. And then he was watching Rez mount a low stage in a crowded club of some kind. Everything psychedelic Korean pinks. Hypersaturated tints, like cartoon versions of the flesh of tropical melons.
It is what we feel.
Rez raised a microphone and began to speak of new modes of being, of something he called the alchemical marriage. And somewhere, Arlie's hand was on his arm, her voice tense.
Laney, sorry. We need you back here now. Mr. Kuwayama is here.
34. Casino. Chia looked out between the dusty slats to the street, where it was raining. The Eideru had done that.
Chia had never made it rain in Venice, but she didn't mind the way it looked. It seemed to fit. It was like Seattle. The Idaru said this apartment was called a casino. Chia had seen casinos on television, and they hadn't looked anything like this. This was a few small rooms with flaking plaster walls and big old-fashioned furniture with gold lion feet. Everything worked up with fractals, so you could almost smell it. It would have smelled dusty, she thought, and also like perfume. Chia hadn't been to many of these modules, the insides of her Venice, because they were all sort of creepy. They didn't give her the feeling she got in the street. Zona's head on the lion-footed table made that bug-zap sound. She'd reduced herself to that, Zona, this little blue neon miniature of her Aztec skull, about the size of a small apple. Because Chia had told her to shut up and put the switchblade away, and that had pissed her off and maybe hurt her feelings. But Chia hadn't known what else to do. Chia had wanted to hear what the Idaru had had to say, and Zona's I'm dangerous act totally got in the way. And that was all it was, just acting out, because people couldn't really hurt each other when they were ported. Not physically, anyway. And that had always been a problem with Zona. That whole swelling up thunderhead macho thing. Kelsey and the others would make fun of it, but Zona was fierce enough verbally that they'd only do it behind her back. She had never known what to make of it. It was like Zona's personality wasn't together around acting like that. Now Zona wasn't talking, just making the bug zap sound every so often to remind Chia she was still there and still pissed off. The Idaru was talking, though, telling Chia the old Venetian meaning of the word casino. Not some giant sort of mall place where people went to gamble and watch shows, but something that sounded more like what Masahiko had said about love hotels. Like people had houses where they lived, but these casinos, these secret little apartments hidden around town, were where they went to be with other people. But they hadn't been too comfortable there, not to judge by this one, even though the Idaru kept adding more and more candles. The Idaru said she loved candles. The Idaru had the music master's haircut now. It made her look like a girl pretending to be a boy. She seemed to like his greatcoat, too, because she kept turning on her heel, his heel, to twirl the hem out. I've seen so many new places, she said, smiling at Chia. So many different people and things. So have I. But he told me it would be this way. But I had no idea, really. Twirl. Having seen all this, I'm so much more. Does it feel like that for you when you travel? The death's head emitted a burst of blue light and a sound like a short, sharp fart. Zona! Chia hissed. Then, all in a rush, to the Idaru. I haven't traveled much, and so far I don't think I like it. But we just came here to see what you were, because we didn't know, because you're in my software, and maybe in Zona's sight, too. And that bothers her, because it's supposed to be private. The country with the beautiful sky? Yeah, Chia said. You aren't really supposed to be able to go there unless she asks you. I didn't know. I'm sorry.
The Idaru looked sad.
I thought I could go anywhere.
Except where you come from.
Seattle?
The hive of dreams, said the Idaru.
Windows heaped against the sky. I can see the pictures. But there is no path. I know you've come from there. But it's there, isn't there? The walled city?
It had to be, because that was where she and Zona were coming from now.
We're only ported through. Zona's in Mexico City and I'm in this hotel, okay? And we really better go back now because I don't know what's happening.
The blue skull expanded and went Zona form, grim and sullen.
Finally you say something worthwhile. Why do you speak with this thing? She is nothing. Only a more expensive version of this toy of yours she's stolen and taken over. Now that I've seen her, I can only think that Rez is crazy, pathetically deluded.
But he isn't crazy,
the Idaru said.
It is what we feel together. He has told me that we will not be understood, not at first. And there will be resistance, hostility. But we mean no harm. And he believes that in the end only good can come from our union.
You synthetic bitch, Zona said. You think we don't see what you're doing? You aren't real. You aren't as real as this imitation of a drowned city. You're a made-up thing, and you want to suck what's real out of him.
Chia saw the thunderhead, the aura starting to build.
this girl across the ocean to find you out, and now her life is in danger, and she is too stupid to see that you are the cause.
The Eideroo looked at Chia.
Your life?
Chia had to swallow.
Maybe,
she said.
I don't know. I'm scared.
And the Eideroo was gone, draining from Chia's music master like a color that had no name. He stood there in the light of 20 candles, his expression unreadable.
I'm sorry, he said.
But what exactly was it we were discussing?
We weren't, said Chia.
Then her goggles were lifted away, taking the music master and the room in Venice and Zona with them, and two of the fingers of the hand that held the goggles was ringed with gold. Each ring linked to a gold watch's massive bracelet with its own fine length of chain. Pale eyes looked into hers. Eddie smiled. Chia drew her breath in to scream, and another hand, not Eddie's, but large and white, smelling of metallic perfume, covered her mouth and nose. And a hand on her shoulder pressing down, as Eddie stepped back, letting the goggles fall to the white carpet. Holding her gaze, Eddie raised one finger to his lips, smiled, and said, "Shh." Then stepped aside, turning away, so that Chia saw Masahiko sitting there on the floor, the black cups over his eyes, his fingers moving in their tip sets. Eddie took something black from his pocket and reached Masahiko in two silent, exaggerated steps. He did something to the black thing and bent down with it. She saw it touch Masahiko's neck. Masahiko's muscles all seemed to jerk at once, his legs straightening, throwing him sideways, where he lay on the white carpet, twitching, his mouth open. One of the black cups had come off. The other still covered his right eye. Eddie turned back, looking at her.
"Where is it?" he said.
"35. The Test Bed of Futurity." Shannon offered Lainey a tall foam cup with half an inch of very hot, very black coffee in it. Beyond him, past the orange barricade, was a long white Land Rover with integral crash bars and green tinted windows. Kuwayama waited there in a dark gray suit, his rimless glasses glinting in the greenish light from the cable overhead. A black-suited driver stood beside him. "What's he want?" Lainey asked Arlie, tasting Shannon's espresso. It left grit on his tongue.
"We don't know," said Arlie, "but apparently Rez told him where to find us."
"Rez?
That's what he said."
Yamazaki appeared at Lainey's elbow. His glasses had either been repaired or replaced, but two of the pins holding the sleeve of his green jacket had come undone.
"Mr. Kuwayama is Reitoe's creator, in a sense. He is the founder and chief executive of Famous Aspect, her corporate entity. He was the initiator of her project. He asks to speak with you."
"I thought it was so urgent that I accessed the combined data for you."
"It is, yes," said Yamazaki. "But I think you should speak with Kuwayama now, please."
Lainey followed him through the black modules and past the barricades, and watched as the two exchanged bows.
"This is Mr. Carlin Lainey," Yamazaki said, "our special researcher."
Then to Lainey,
"Michio Kuwayama, chief executive officer of Famous Aspect."
No one would have guessed that Kuwayama had so recently been up there in the dark at the Western World, the crowd heaving and screaming around him. How had he gotten out, Lainey wondered? And wouldn't the Eideroo have been lit up like a Christmas tree? Blood had seeped down into Lainey's shoe. It was sticky between his toes. How much had the combined weight of all the human nervous tissue on the planet increased since he and Arlie had left the bubblegum bar with Blackwell? He felt like he'd acquired more himself, all of it uncomfortable. "I'm sorry," he said. "I don't have a card."
"It doesn't matter," Kuwayama said, in his precise, oddly accented English. He shook Lainey's hand. "I know that you are very busy. We appreciate your taking the time to meet with us."
The plural caused Lainey to glance at the driver, who wore the kind of shoes that Rydell had worn at the chateau, flexible-looking black lace-ups with cleated rubbery soles. But it didn't seem as though the driver was the other half of that we.
"Now," Kuwayama said to Yamazaki, "if you will excuse us."
Yamazaki bowed quickly and walked back toward the van, where Arlie, pretending to be doing something to the espresso machine, was watching out of the corner of her eye. The driver opened the Land Rover's rear door for Lainey, who got in. Kuwayama got in from the other side. When the door closed behind him, they were alone. Something that looked like a large silver thermos bottle was mounted between the two seats in a rack with padded clamps. "Yamazaki tells us that you had bandwidth difficulties during the dinner," Kuwayama said.
"That's true," Lainey said.
"We have adjusted the bandwidth." And the Eideru appeared between them, smiling. Lainey saw that the illusion even provided a seat for her, melding the two buckets in which he and Kuwayama sat into a third.
"Did you find what you were looking for when you left me in Stockholm, Mr. Lainey?"
He looked into her eyes.
"What sort of computing power did it take to create something like this? Something that looked back at you?"
He remembered phrases from Kuwayama's conversation with Rez. Desiring machines, aggregates of subjective desire, an architecture of articulated longing.
"I started to," he said.
"And what was it that you saw that made you unable to look at me during our dinner?"
"Snow," Lainey said,
and was startled to feel himself begin to blush.
"Mountains. But I think it was only a video you've made."
"We don't make Ray's videos," Kuwayama said. "Not in the usual sense. They emerge directly from her ongoing experience of the world. They are her dreams, if you will."
"You dream as well, don't you, Mr. Lainey?"
the Eideru said.
"That is your talent. Yamazaki says it is like seeing faces in the clouds, except that the faces are really there. I cannot see the faces in clouds, but Kuwayama-san tells me that one day I will. It is a matter of plectics."
"Yamazaki says?"
"I don't understand it," Lainey said. "It's just something I can do."
"An extraordinary talent," Kuwayama said. "We are most fortunate, and we are fortunate as well in Mr. Yamazaki, who, though hired by Mr. Blackwell, has an open mind."
"Mr. Blackwell is not too pleased about Rez and..."
Nodding toward her.
"Mr. Blackwell might be unhappy that I'm talking with you."
"Blackwell loves Rez in his own way," she said. "It is concern that he feels. But he does not understand that our union has already taken place. Our marriage will be gradual, ongoing. We wish simply to grow together. When Blackwell and the others can see that our union is best for both of us, all will be well. And you can do that for us, Mr. Lainey."
"I can't."
"Yamazaki has explained what you are attempting with the data from the low-res fan archives," Kuwayama said. "But that data says nothing or very little about Ray. We propose the addition of a third level of information. We will add Ray to the mix, and the pattern that emerges will be a portrait of their union."
"But you're just information yourself," Lainey thought, looking at her.
"Lots of it, running through God knows how many machines." But the dark eyes looked back at him, filled with something for all the world like hope.
"Will you do it, Mr. Lainey? Will you help us?"
"Look," Lainey said, "I only work here. I'll do it if Yamazaki tells me to, if he takes the responsibility. But I want you to tell me something, okay?"
"What is it that you wish to know?" asked Kuwayama.
"What is all this about?"
The question surprised Lainey, who hadn't quite known what it was he was about to ask. Kuwayama's mild eyes regarded him through the rimless lenses.
"It is about futurity, Mr. Lainey."
"Futurity?"
"Do you know that our word for nature is of quite recent coinage? It is scarcely 100 years old."
"We have never developed a sinister view of technology, Mr. Lainey.
It is an aspect of the natural, of oneness. Through our efforts, oneness perfects itself."
Kuwayama smiled.
"And popular culture," he said, "is the test bed of our futurity."
Arlie made a better espresso than Shannon. Lainey, squatting in the back of the green van on popping shreds of bubble pack, watched Yamazaki over the rim of a foam cup with a fresh double shot,
What do you think you're doing, Yamazaki? You want us both to wind up wearing smaller shoes or what? Blackwell likes to nail people's hands to tables. And you're making deals with the Eideru and her boss? Lainey had insisted that they climb in back here for privacy. Yamazaki squatted opposite him, blinking.
I am not the one making deals, Yamazaki said. Rez and Raithaway are in almost constant contact now, and recent improvements allow her new degrees of freedom. Rez let her into the data, all that you first tried to access. He did this without informing Blackwell.
He shrugged.
Now she accesses the fan data as well, and what they propose may well allow us to bring this to a conclusion. Blackwell is more than ever convinced there is some conspiracy. The attack in the nightclub.
Which was about?
I do not know. An attempted kidnapping? They wish to harm Rez? To abduct the Eideru's peripheral? It was handled with amazing clumsiness, but Blackwell says that is the earmark of the Combinat. Is that the word, earmark?
I don't know, Lainey said.
Hallmark?
You don't think Blackwell is going to cut our toes off if we do this?
No. We are employed by a low-res shell corporation.
Paragon Asia.
But Blackwell is employed by the low-res partnership. If Rez tells us to do something, we must do it.
Even if Blackwell thinks it endangers Rez's security?
Yamazaki shrugged.
Past his shoulder, through the van's rear window, Lainey could see Shannon trundling the gray module they'd unloaded from the rear of Kuwayama's Land Rover. It was twice the size of the black ones that Arlie used. He watched Shannon push it past the orange barricades. 36. Mary Alice.
Not yelling, please,
said the one who held her, and then he took his hand away from her mouth.
Where is it? Eddie's pale eyes.
There, Chia said, pointing. She could see the ragged edge of blue and yellow plastic sticking up out of her open bag. Then she saw that Mary Alice was asleep on the pink bed, curled up with her high-heeled shoes still on, clutching a pillow to her face. The top of the little fridge was covered with empty miniature bottles. Eddie took a black and gold pen from his coat pocket and went to the bag. He bent over it and used his pen as a probe, moving the plastic aside so he could see. It's here, he said. He's there. The other hand was still holding Chia's shoulder down where she sat on the carpet.
This is it, Eddie said. Stay putting.
The hand left her shoulder, and the man, who must have been kneeling behind her, got up and joined Eddie, peering into Chia's bag. He was taller and wore a tan suit and fancy western boots, big bones in his face, his hair a lighter blonde than Eddie's, a reddish, crescent-shaped birthmark high on his right cheekbone.
How you're being sure?
Jesus, Yevgeny!
The man in the tan suit straightened up, looked at Mary Alice, bent to pull the pillow away from her face.
How is your woman sleeping on bed in this room, Eddie?
Eddie saw that it was Mary Alice.
Fuck, he said. You are telling us girl and your woman is incidental. You are telling us they meet on plane. Is only accident. Is accident your woman is here? We do not like accident.
Eddie looked from Mary Alice to the man, he must be Russian, to Chia.
What the fuck is this bitch doing here?
Like it had to be Chia's fault.
She found us,
Chia said.
She said she knew somebody at the cab company.
No, said the Russian. We know somebody at cab company. It's too much incident.
We've got it, okay?
Eddie said.
Why do you want to complicate things?
The Russian rubbed his cheek as though the birthmark might come off on his hand.
Please consider, he said. We are giving you isotope. You want to know is isotope, you can test. You're giving us this.
He poked the sharp toe of his cowboy boot into the side of Chia's bag.
How are we sure?
Yevgeny, Eddie said very calmly, you must know that deals like this require a certain basis of trust.
The Russian considered that.
No, he said. Base is not good. Our people trace this girl to Big Rocker Band. What is she working for, Eddie? Tonight we send people to talk to them. They fall on us like fucking wolves. One man I'm still losing.
I don't work for Lorenz,
Chia said.
I'm just in the club. Mary Alice put that thing in my bag when I was asleep on the plane.
Masahiko groaned, sighed, and seemed to go back under. Eddie still had the stun gun in his hand.
You ready for another jolt?
He asked Masahiko, super tense and angry.
Eddie?
Mary Alice said from the bed.
You ungrateful piece of shit.
Sitting up on the edge of the bed with her cigarette lighter held in both hands, pointing it straight at Eddie. Eddie stiffened. You could see something run through him, freezing him there.
Some basis, said the Russian.
Jesus, Mary Alice, Eddie said. Would you get that? You got any idea how illegal that is here?
Off a Russian boy, she said. Exit holes the size of grapefruit.
Mary Alice didn't sound drunk exactly, but something about the look in her reddened eyes told Chia she was. Some very scary kind of drunk.
You think you can just use people up, Eddie? Use them up and throw them away?
She used the toe of one shoe to get the other off, then used her toe to get the first shoe off. She stood up in her stocking feet, swaying just a little bit, but the gun-shaped lighter stayed straight out from her shoulders, the way cops did it on television. Eddie still had the stun gun in his hand.
Make him throw that black thing away, Mary Alice,
Chia urged.
Drop it,
Mary Alice said, and it seemed to give her pleasure to say it, something she'd been hearing people say on shows all her life, and now she was getting to say it herself and mean it. Eddie dropped it.
Now, kick it away.
That's the other half of the line, Chia thought. The stun gun wound up a few feet from Chia's knee beside her goggles, which were upside down on the carpet, still cabled to her sand benders. She could see the twin flat rectangles on the opaque lens faces, simple video units. If Zona went to Chia's system software and activated those now, she'd get a bug's eye view of Mary Alice's stocking feet, Eddie's shoes, the Russian's cowboy boots, and maybe the side of Masahiko's head.
Ungrateful, Mary Alice said. Ungrateful shit. Get in that bathroom.
She came around so the lighter was pointing at Eddie and the Russian, but with the open bathroom door behind them.
I know you're upset. Shit. Shit goes in the toilet, Eddie. Get in the bathroom.
Eddie took a step backward, his palms up in what he probably thought looked like an appeal to reasonableness and understanding. The Russian took a step back, too.
7 fucking years, Mary Alice said. 7. You weren't shit when I met you. God, you and that uppity mobile talk. You make me sick. Who paid the fucking rent? Who bought the meal? Who bought you your fucking clothes, you vain piece of shit? You and your uppity mobile and your image, and you gotta have a smaller fucking phone than the next guy, because I'm telling you, honey, you sure as fuck don't have a bigger dick.
Mary Alice's hands were shaking now, but really just enough to make the lighter look even more dangerous.
Mary Alice, Eddie said, you know I know everything you've done for me, everything you've contributed to my career. It doesn't leave my mind for a minute, baby, believe me, it never does. And all of this is a misunderstanding, baby, just a rough patch on the highway of life. And if you will only just put down that fucking gun and have a nice drink like a civilized person.
Shut the fuck up,
Mary Alice screamed at the top of her lungs, the words all run together. Eddie's mouth snapped shut like a puppet's.
7 fucking years,
Mary Alice said, making it sound like some children's charm.
7 fucking years, and 2 of them here, Eddie, 2 of them here, and flying back and fucking forth for you, Eddie, and coming back, and it's always light here.
Tears came, streaking Mary Alice's makeup.
Everywhere. Couldn't sleep for all the light, like a fog over the city. Get in the bathroom.
Mary Alice taking a step forward, Eddie and the Russian taking one back. Chia reached over and picked up the stun gun. She wasn't sure why. It had a pair of blunt chrome fangs on one end, a red ridged stud on one edge. She was surprised at how little it weighed. She remembered the ones the boys at her school had made from those disposable flash cameras.
And it always finds me, that light,
Mary Alice said.
Always.
No matter what I drink, what I take on top of that, it finds me and it wakes me up. It's like powder, blows in under the door. Nothing to do about it, gets in your eyes. And all that brightness falling.
Eddie was half back through the doorway now, the Russian behind him actually in the bathroom. And she didn't like that because she couldn't see the Russian's hands. She heard the ambient bird song start as the bathroom sensed the Russian.
And you put me there, Eddie. That Shinjuku, you put me where that light could get me, and I could never get away.
And then Mary Alice pulled the trigger. Eddie screamed, a weird, shrill sound bouncing off the black and white tiles. That must have covered the click of the lighter, which hadn't even produced a flame. Mary Alice didn't panic. She held her aim and calmly pulled the trigger again. She got a light that time, but Eddie, with a howl of rage, swatted the lighter aside, grabbed Mary Alice by the throat, and started pounding her in the face with his fist, the howl resolving into bitch, 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 in sync with each blow. And that was when Chia, without really thinking about it, came up from where she'd been sitting for so long that she found her legs were asleep and didn't work, so that she had to turn her lunge into a roll and roll again, before she could jam the chrome tips of the stun gun against Eddie's ankle and push the red stud. She wasn't sure it would work on an ankle or through his sock. But it did, maybe because Eddie wore those really thin socks. But it got Mary Alice, too, so that they seemed to jerk together, toppling into each other's arms. And the dark blur that flew past Chia then was Masahiko, who pulled the door shut on the Russian, grabbed the knob with both hands, and jumped up, jamming one paper-slippered foot against the wall, the other against the door, and hung there. "Run," he said, his arms and legs straining. Then his hand slipped off the round chrome knob, and he landed on his ass. Chia saw the knob start to turn. She put the fangs of the stun gun against the doorknob and pushed the stud, and kept pushing it. 37. Work experience. Lainey sat in the van's front passenger seat again, the phones on his lap, waiting for Arlie to connect Kuwayama's gray module. He looked through the windshield at the concrete wall. His side didn't hurt quite as much now, but the meeting with Kuwayama and the Aidaru, and then his huddle in the van with Yamazaki, had left him more confused than ever. If Rez and Reitoe were making decisions in tandem, and if Yamazaki had decided to go along with them, where did that leave him? He couldn't see that Blackwell was going to wake up to find some innate wonderfulness in the idea of Rez and Ray together. As far as Blackwell was concerned, Rez was still just trying to marry a software agent, whatever that might turn out to mean. But Lainey knew now that the Aidaru was more complex, more powerful than any Hollywood synthespian, particularly if Kuwayama were telling the truth about the videos being her dreams. All he knew about artificial intelligence came from work he'd done on a slit scan episode documenting the unhappy personal life of one of the field's leading researchers. But he knew that true AI was assumed never to have been achieved, and that current attempts to achieve it were supposed to be in directions quite opposite the creation of software that was good at acting like beautiful young women. If there were going to be genuine AI, the argument ran, it was most likely to evolve in ways that had least to do with pretending to be human. Lainey remembered screening a lecture in which the slit scan episode subject had suggested that AI might be created accidentally, and that people might not initially recognize it for what it was. Arlie opened the door on the driver's side and got in. "Sorry this is taking so long," she said.
"You weren't expecting it," Lainey said.
"It isn't the software. It's an optical valve, a cable tip. They use a different gauge, one the French use." She curled her hands around the top of the wheel and rested her chin on them. "So we're dealing with these huge volumes of information, no problem, but we don't have the right cable to pour it through."
"Can you fix it?"
"Shannon's got one in his room, probably in a porno outfit, but he won't admit it."
She looked at him sideways.
"Shannon's got a friend on the security team. His friend says that Blackwell questioned one of the men who tried to grab Rez tonight."
"That's who they were after? Rez?"
"Seems like it. They're Combinat, and they claim Rez has hijacked something of theirs."
"Hijacked what?"
"He didn't know." She closed her eyes.
"What do you think happened to him, the one Blackwell questioned?"
"I don't know.
She opened her eyes, straightened up. But somehow, I don't think we'll find out. Can he do that?
Torture people? Kill them?
She looked at Lainey.
Well,
she said finally, he does have a certain advantage, making us think he might. It's an established fact that he did that in his previous line of work. You know what scares me most about Blackwell?
What?
Sometimes I find myself getting used to him.
Shannon rapped on the door beside her,
held up a length of cable. Ready when you are, she said to Lainey, opening the door and sliding from behind the wheel.
Lainey looked through the tinted windshield at the concrete wall
and remembered policing the steps outside the municipal court in Gainesville with Shaquille and Kenny, two others from the orphanage. Shaquille had gone on to the drug testing program with Lainey, but Kenny had been transferred to another facility near Denver. Lainey had no idea what had become of either of them. But it had been Shaquille who'd pointed out to Lainey that when the injection had the real stuff in it, your mouth filled with a taste like corroded metal, aluminum or something.
Placebo, Shaquille had said. Don't taste. And it was true.
You could tell right away.
The three of them had had work experience there, 5 or 6 times, picking up the offerings people left before their day in court.
These were considered to be a health hazard and were usually carefully hidden, and you often found them by the smell or the buzzing of flies. Parts of chickens, usually, tied up with colored yarn. What Shaquille said was the head of a goat once. Shaquille said the people who left these things were drug dealers, and they did it because it was their religion. Lainey and the others wore pale green latex gloves with orange Kevlar thimbles on the tips that gave you heat rash. They put the offerings in a white snap-top bucket with peeling biohazard stickers. Shaquille had claimed to know the names of some of the gods these things were offered up to, but Lainey hadn't been fooled. The names Shaquille made up, like Ogun and Sam Eddy, were obviously just that. And even Shaquille dropping a white ball of chicken feathers into the bucket had said an extra lawyer or two was probably a better investment.
But they do it while they wait, hedged at best.
Lainey had actually preferred this to work experiences at fast food franchises, even though it meant they got body searched for drugs when they got back. He'd told Yamazaki and Blackwell about knowing that Allison Shires was going to try to commit suicide, and now they must think he could see the future. But he knew he couldn't. That would be like those chicken parts the dealers hid around the courthouse steps, changing what was going to happen. What would happen in the future came out of what was happening now. Lainey knew he couldn't predict it. And something about the experience of the nodal points made him suspect that nobody could. The nodal points seemed to form when something might be about to change. Then he saw a place where change was most likely if something triggered it. Maybe something as small as Allison Shires buying the blades for a box cutter. But if an earthquake had come that night and pitched her apartment down into Fountain Avenue, or if she'd lost the pack of blades, but if she'd used credit to buy that Wednesday night special, which she couldn't do because it was illegal and required cash, then it would have been obvious to anybody what she might be on the verge of doing. Arlie opened the passenger door.
You okay?
Sure,
Lainey said, picking up the iPhones.
Sure?
Let's do it.
He looked at the phones.
It's up to you.
She touched his arm.
We'll get you a doctor after, okay?
Thanks,
Lainey said, and put the phones on, the taste flooding his mouth. The low-res data, translucent and intricately interpenetrated by the archives of the band's fan base, was crawling with new textures, maps that resolved when he focused on them, into Shaquille in his Federal Issue sweats, showing Lainey the goat's head. It had been skinned, and nails had been driven into it, and Shaquille had pried open the jaw to show where the missing tongue had been replaced with a blood-soaked piece of brown paper with writing on it. That would be the name of the prosecutor, Shaquille had explained. Lainey shut his eyes, but the image remained. He opened them on the Eideru, her features rimmed with fur. She was looking at him. She wore some kind of embroidered fur-lined hat with ear flaps, and snow was swirling around her. But then she flattened, dwindling into the texture maps that ran down through the reef of data. And he let himself go with that, and he felt himself pass through the core of it,
the very center, and out the other side. Wait, he said, and there seemed to be a lag before he heard his own voice.
Perspective,
the Eideru said.
Yamazaki's parallax.
Something seemed to turn him around, so that he looked directly at the data, but from some new angle and from a great distance, and all around it there was nothing at all. But through the data, like some infinitely more complex version of Arlie's real tree, ran two vaguely parallel armatures. Rez and the Eideru. They were sculpted in duration. Rez's beginning at the far end of it all as something very minor, the first hints of his career, and growing as it progressed to something braided, multi-stranded. But then it began to get smaller again, Lainey saw, the strands loosening. And that would be the point, he thought, when the singer began to become the thing that Kathy hated. The one who took up celebrity space just because he was a celebrity. Because he was of a certain order of magnitude. The Eideru's data began somewhere after that. And it began as something smoothly formed, deliberate, but lacking complexity. But at the points where it had swerved closest to Rez's data, he saw that it had begun to acquire a sort of complexity. Or randomness, he thought. The human thing. That's how she learns. And both these armatures, these sculptures in time, were nodal, and grew more so toward the point, the present, where they intertwined. He stood beside the Eideru on the beach he'd seen recorded on the binoculars in the bedroom of the guest house in Ireland. Brownish-green sea, flecked with white caps, stiff wind catching at the ear flaps of her hat. He couldn't feel that wind, but he could hear it, so loud now that he had trouble hearing her over it.
Can you see them?
She shouted. See what?
The faces in the clouds, the nodal points. I can see nothing. You must indicate them to me.
And she was gone, the sea with her. Lainey staring into the data again, where the digitized histories of Rez and Retoe mingled, on the verge of something else. If he had tried in Los Angeles, would the box cutter blade have emerged from Allison Shire's nodal point? He tried. He was looking out across a fuzzy, indistinct, white plain, not snow, to where a pair of vast and very ornate brown-on-brown western boots swung past against a cliff-like backdrop of violent pink. Then the image was gone, replaced by the rotating form of a three-dimensional object, though Lainey had no idea what it was supposed to be. With no clues as to scale, it looked vaguely like a Los Angeles bus with the wheels removed.
Suite 17,
the Eideru said.
Hotel Die.
Die? Bus vanished, apparently taking boots with it.
What is a love hotel?
What?
Love. Hotel.
Where people go to make love, I think.
What is Rodel Van Erp Primary Biomolecular Programming Module, C/7A?
I don't know, Lainey said.
But you have just shown it to me. It is our union, our intersection, that from which the rest must unfold.
Wait, Lainey said. Wait, you've got another one here. They sort of overlap. The trying made his side hurt. But there were hills in the distance, twisted trees, the low roof line of a wooden house. But the Eideru was gone, and the house, its fabric eaten from within, was shimmering, folding. And then a glimpse of something towering, mismatched windows and a twisting moire sky. Then Arlie pulled the phones off.
Stop screaming, she said.
Yamazaki was beside her.
Stop it, Lainey.
He took a long, shuddering breath, braced his palms against the padded cowling of the dash, and closed his eyes. He felt Arlie's hand against his neck. We have to go there, he said.
Go where?
Suite 17. We'll be late for the wedding. Star. When the stun gun quit making that zapping sound, she had dropped it. The doorknob wasn't turning. No sound from the bathroom but the faint recorded cries of tropical birds. She whipped around. Masahiko was trying to get his computer into the plaid carrier bag. She dived for her sand vendors, grabbed it up, still trailing her goggles, and turned to the pink bed. Her bag was beside it on the floor, with the blue and yellow SeaTac plastic showing. She pulled that out, the thing still in it, and tossed it on the bed. She bent to shove her sandbenders into her bag, but glanced back at the bathroom door when she thought she heard something. The knob was turning again. The Russian opened the door. When he let go of the knob, she saw that his hand was inside something that looked like a Day-Glo pink hand puppet. One of the sex toys from the black cabinet. He was using it as insulation. He peeled it off his fingers and tossed it back over his shoulder. The bird sounds faded as he stepped out. Masahiko, who'd been trying to get one of his feet into one of his black shoes, was looking at the Russian, too. He still had a paper slipper on the other foot. "You are going?" the Russian said.
"It's on the bed," Shia said. "We didn't have anything to do with it."
The Russian noticed the stun gun on the carpet, beside the pointed toe of his boot. He raised the boot and brought his heel down. Shia heard the plastic case crack.
"Artemy, my friend of Novokuznetskaya, is doing himself great indignity with this."
He prodded the fragments of the stun gun with his toe.
"He's wearing very tight jeans, Artemy. Leather is fashion. Putting in front pocket, trigger is pressing accident. Artemy is shocking his manhood."
The Russian showed Chia his large, uneven teeth.
"Still we are laughing, yes?"
"Please,"
Chia said.
"We just want to go."
The Russian stepped past Eddie and Mary Alice, who lay tangled on the carpet.
"Your accident like Artemy to his manhood, yes? You're only happening to this owner of fine nightclub."
He indicated the unconscious Eddie,
"who is smuggler and other things. Very complicated. But you are only accident?"
"That's right,"
Chia said.
"You are of low res."
It sounded like lore S. He stepped closer to Chia and looked down into the bag.
"You're knowing what this is?"
"No,"
Chia lied.
"I'm not."
The Russian looked at her.
"We are not liking accident ever. Not allowing accident."
His hands came up then, and she saw that the back of the third joint of each of his fingers was pink with those dots, each one the size of the end of a pencil eraser. She'd seen those at her last school, and knew they meant a laser had recently been used to remove a tattoo. She looked up at his face. He looked like someone who was about to do something that he might not want to do, but that he knew he had to. But then she saw his eyes slide past her, narrowing, and she turned in time to see the door to the corridor swing inward. A man, wider than the doorway, seemed to flow into the room. There was a big X of flesh-colored tape across one side of his face, and he was wearing a coat the color of dull metal. Chia saw one huge, scarred hand slip into his coat. The other held something black that ended in a mag-strip tab.
"Yobtyovumat,"
said the Russian, soft syllables of surprise. The stranger's hand emerged, holding something that looked to Chia like a very large pair of chrome-plated scissors, but then unfolded with a series of small, sharp clicks, and apparently of its own accord, into a kind of glittering, skeletal axe, its leading edge hawk-like and lethal, the head behind it tapering like an ice pick.
"My mother?"
said the stranger, who sounded somehow delighted.
"Did you say my mother?"
His face was shiny with scar tissue. More scars crisscrossed his shaven, stubbled skull.
"Ah, no,"
the Russian said, lifting his hand so that the palm showed.
"Figuring of speech only."
Another man stepped in, around the man with the axe, and this one had dark hair and wore a loose black suit. The headband of a monocle rig crossed his forehead, the unit covering his right eye. The eye she could see was wide and bright and green, but still it took a second before she recognized him. Then she had to sit down on the pink bed. "Where is it?" this man, who looked like Rez, asked, except he looked thicker somehow, his cheeks unhollowed. Neither the Russian nor the man with the axe answered. The man with the axe closed the door behind him with his heel. The green eye and the video monocle looked at Chia.
Do you know where it is?
What?
The biomech primer module, or whatever it is you call it.
He paused, touching the phone in his right ear, listening.
Excuse me.
Rodel Van Erp Primary Biomolecular Programming Module C/7A.
I love you.
Chia stared. Ray-to-way, he explained, touching the headband, and she knew that it had to be him.
It's here, in this bag.
He reached into the blue and yellow plastic and drew the thing out, turning it over in his hands.
This is our future? The medium of our marriage?
Excuse, please, the Russian said. But you must know this is belonging to me.
He sounded genuinely sorry.
Rez looked up, the nanotech unit held casually in his hands.
It's yours?
Rez tilted his head like a bird, curious.
Where did you get it?
The Russian coughed.
In exchange. This gentleman on floor.
Rez saw Eddie and Mary Alice.
Are they dead?
Vaulted, yes. Being most time non-lethal. Your girl on bed.
Rez looked at Chia.
Who are you?
Chia Pet McKenzie,
she said automatically.
I'm from Seattle. I'm in your fan club.
She felt her face burning. The brow above the green eye went up. He seemed to be listening to something.
Oh,
he said, and paused.
She did?
Really? That's wonderful.
He smiled at Chia.
Ray says you've been totally central to everything, and that we have a great deal to thank you for.
Chia swallowed.
She does?
But Rez had turned to the Russian. We have to have this. He raised the nanotech unit. We'll negotiate now. Name your price.
Rosa,
the man at the door said.
You can't do that. This bastard's combinat.
Chia saw the green eye close as if Rez were making a conscious effort to calm himself. When it opened, he said,
But they're the government, aren't they, Blackwell? We've negotiated with governments before.
It's for the legals,
the scarred man said. But now there was an edge of worry in his voice. The Russian seemed to hear it, too. He slowly lowered his hands.
What were you planning to do with this?
Rez asked him. The Russian looked down at the thing in Rez's hands, as if considering, then raised his eyes. A muscle was jumping in his cheek. He seemed to come to a decision.
We are developing ambitious public works project, he said.
Oh, Jesus,
Mary Alice said from the carpet, so hoarsely that at first Chia couldn't identify the source.
They must have put something in that. They did, I swear to God, they did.
And then she threw up. End of side 5. To continue, turn the cassette over.